all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense for this Wednesday, December 14th. It rained most of the night here on Lake Wissota, but about an hour ago, it switched over to snow. And it's going to be a messy one here, that greasy skid stuff on the roads. Some of it's going to freeze in places. It's going to be such a mixed bag everywhere. It really would be a good idea not to venture out if you don't have to. Several school districts have already closed. We won't get into those here because we're a statewide show, but you know, it's not like the old days where you had to tune into one, you know, place and get your school closings from, you know, now with the interwebs and people text messaging back and forth and everything, you should be able to find out that the school bus is or is not coming for the little ones today. Coming up this morning, we're going to check in at 6:30 with Sean Fettaplace and Naomi Smith from Main Street Alliance, Wisconsin, the group that's been mobilizing small business owners, helping them use their voice, and to never assume that the big business lobbyists are ever on the side of small hometown entrepreneurs when it comes to issues in Madison and Washington, D.C. At 7:15, we plan to talk live with Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign about that new report outlining how much outside political money poured into Wisconsin for the just completed elections. Melissa Kay from locally grown radio WFHR joins us at 6:50 for a little music and fun. And Todd Alba joins us at 7:50 ahead of his 8 o'clock show on many of these Civic Media Network stations. Now, if you're in, you know, listening to us in Waukesha or Madison, or you don't hear Todd at 8 o'clock, you can hear him. You just got to go to the Civic Media app or the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. All of our shows there are available as podcasts. There are listen live options. So head over there and give all of our various shows a listen and see if you can't find your next new favorite show along with this one. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Our phone number is 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. Aaron Zommers is babysitting me yet again as I try to put this cold or flu or whatever it is behind me. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and everybody else.
What's the situation down there? Has it been raining all night, or did you get some snow?
I don't know if it did all night. I just know when I woke up this morning it was. I slept pretty well. Nothing woke me up, so I'll take it.
Nice. Well, congratulations. I learned that there is one benefit to the sun going down earlier than ever at this time of year. And by the way, that's going to start to change after this week. This is our latest sunrise this morning, 7:36. And then the sun sets at 4:24. And first on the sunrise and then on the sun, or first on the sun sets and then the sun rises, things are going to get a little bit longer coming up here shortly. But the good thing about it being downright dark at 4:30 in the afternoon is that if you've been sick at home all day, and you've pretty much come to the end of your rope, you can crawl in bed and feel no shame whatsoever because it's dark. You can convince yourself it's, you know, 8:30, 9:30, 10 o'clock, whatever it needs to be. And that's what I did. Got a few hours, got up for a small spell, got a couple more hours in, just trying to cough this thing away. And, you know, took a COVID test and it was negative. And like I said, I think the slight fever is kind of giving it away as a little flu bug, but cough drops, man, they are my best friend this time of year when I catch a bug like this. All right, over at Up North News, we have social media stories and website stories that have gone up recently, and I wanted to let you know a couple of those stories that are going on, and then we'll get into sports and the day's headlines and things like that. But if you go to upnorthnewswi.com, first off, you'll see a note that, you know, we are at the 10-year anniversary of the Sandy Hook massacre and an article that talks about what has and what hasn't changed in the decades since Sandy Hook. Christina Lurie talks about what Wisconsin's Jewish community wishes everyone knew since an old kind of hate has been increasingly visible lately. And see, I had one more I wanted to get when you get over to it. Oh, yeah. 10 ways that the federal government has delivered for American workers and families this year. Because every year, despite all of the gridlock, despite all the nonsense, as we've noted before, President Biden had one of the most productive first half terms of any president. Now, when you're going up against, you know, billionaires who can spend money to say anything they want, it might be a little bit tougher to get that message out. But if you go to that story on the Up North News website, you will see 10 different ways that workers and families got assistance this year that they might not have had somebody else been in the Oval Office. All right, the Bucks were winners last night. Giannis scored 30 points, Bobby Portis 25, to lead the Bucks over the Golden State Warriors 128-111. Antetokounmpo was in the game for 29 minutes, and so he has now played 22,113 minutes in a Bucks uniform. That is now more than any other player in franchise history, topping Bob Dandridge, who also had just a little over 22,000 minutes in a Bucks uniform. So congratulations to Giannis. And again, big win there. Let's see. Next game is tomorrow night. They go down to Memphis to play there. And again, the Packers next game is Monday Night Football. And that's at Lambeau Field, taking on the LA Rams. All right, let's take a break. More headlines around the state coming up in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio. Just loved seeing Joe Biden come to the podium at the White House yesterday before signing the Respect for Marriage bill into law and putting on those aviators to wild applause and then going to, you know, another barn burner speech to a celebratory crowd of thousands who were bundled up on a chilly afternoon to watch the president sign gay marriage legislation into law. It was a joyful ceremony. You know, I mean, Senator Tammy Baldwin was just beaming. And it was tempered still by the backdrop of an ongoing conservative backlash over gender issues. There were performances by singers Sam Smith and Cyndi Lauper. Vice President Kamala Harris recalled officiating at a wedding between two women in San Francisco. The White House then played a recording of Biden's television interview from a decade ago, where he caused a political furor by unexpectedly disclosing his support for gay marriage. Biden was vice president at the time, and President Barack Obama had not yet endorsed the idea. "I got in trouble," Biden joked at the time. 3 days later, Obama himself publicly endorsed gay marriage. And you know, that does not get talked about nearly enough, that moment. I mean, it was a thunderclap when Joe Biden said that. And yes, by and large, the first bit of it was, "Oh, what a gaffe. You can't say that. You can't undermine your boss, the president." But almost immediately, people registered the significance of that. That, look, it didn't work alone. You know, there were all manner of sacrifices and protests and legal battles and everything. But a sitting vice president to say what he said 10 years ago, that was, as Joe Biden would say, a big deal. And Biden was not shy yesterday afternoon about talking about how this bill, this law, is going to confront head-on some of the uglier elements of society.
"Racism, anti-Semitism, homophobia, transphobia, they're all connected. But the antidote to hate is love. This law and the love it defends strike a blow against hate in all its forms. And that's why this law matters to every single American, no matter who you are or who you love. This shouldn't be about conservative or liberal, red or blue. No, this is about realizing the promise of the Declaration of Independence, a promise rooted in a sacred and secular beliefs, a promise that we're all created equal, We're all entitled to what Abraham Lincoln called an open field and a fair chance.
And by the way, giving somebody else the open field and fair chance that you've always enjoyed does not take anything away from you, except a degree of privilege that you did not necessarily earn. But you're not losing any rights as a result of it. And yet, as mentioned, there continues to be, you know, a right wing that is trying to move deeper into targeting transgender children, trying to roll back LGBTQ protections. Of course, we're all mindful of what happened in Colorado Springs when five people were killed in a shooting last month. And so the president, in talking more about the law, said that the fight against hate just rolls on.
When a person can be married in the morning and thrown out of a restaurant for being gay in the afternoon, this is still wrong. Wrong. And that's why the people you heard speak today continue to fight to pass the Equality Act. When hospitals, libraries, and community centers are threatened and intimidated because they support LGBTQ children and families, we have to speak out. We need to challenge the hundreds of callous, cynical laws introduced in the states targeting transgender children.
The new law is intended to safeguard gay marriages if this U.S. Supreme Court were to ever reverse the Obergefell Hodges 2015 decision that legalized same-sex unions nationwide. The new law also protects interracial marriages. In 1967, the Supreme Court in Loving v. Virginia struck down laws in 16 states that barred interracial marriage. Those things needed to be put into federal law, into federal statute through an act of Congress, because even though Supreme Court decisions have the effect of, you know, an act of law, those decisions, as we've learned, can also be repealed or modified. And so if you want something written into the law, then you actually have to write it into the law. And the signing of this bill marks the culmination of a months-long bipartisan effort sparked by the court's decision in June to overturn Roe v. Wade. Justice Clarence Thomas at the time suggested revisiting other decisions, including the legalization of gay marriage. He specifically called that one out. Clarence Thomas, who himself was in an interracial marriage. It generated fear that more rights could be imperiled by the court's conservative majority. So lawmakers crafted a compromise, led in large part by Senator Tammy Baldwin, that was intended to assuage conservative concerns about religious liberty, such as ensuring churches could still refuse to perform gay marriages. In addition, states would not be required to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples if the court overturns the 2015 ruling, but they will be required to recognize marriages conducted elsewhere in the country. That said, a majority of Republicans in Congress still voted against the legislation, including folks like Glenn Grothman and Tom Tiffany and Scott Fitzgerald. Mike Gallagher voted yes this time. Brian Stile voted yes on it for a second time. This was just good old-fashioned Midwestern work by Senator Tammy Baldwin and others, including other Republicans. And there were Republicans on the White House lawn as well. And it showed that there are times when we can, in fact, rise above, and we can, in fact, ensure, as the president said, that we all can live up to our potential. But that can only happen if we understand that we're all created equal and that we deserve, all of us deserve an open field and a fair chance. 22 past the hour now. I wanted to mention yesterday, still didn't get to that, so I wanted to hit this one right now. This is over at the Milwaukee Brewers stadium, American Family Field. Oh, you know what? Before I even do that, I'm going to make sure I give you the phone numbers again because lines are open right now. 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. Anyway, the restaurant at American Family Field has for the past, couple of years, had what I considered the best name. You know, originally it was a TGI Fridays, and it was most recently called A Restaurant to Be Named Later. And if you're not a baseball fan, that's actually really funny because many, many trades, many player dealings, you know, often involve a couple of headline players. And then they say the deal also involves a player to be named later. but they don't, you know, don't fill it in right away. So a restaurant to be named later, that's pretty good. I would almost be sad to see that go, except in this case, sitting here in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, to say that in partnership with the Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company, the brewers revealed that the J. Leinenkugel's Barrel Yard at American Family Field is set to open in March. It will have a working brewery featuring specialty beer brewed on site by the master brewers at Leinenkugel's. They will have a full-service bar and a restaurant experience overlooking left field at American Family Field. It will have a feature that includes a three-barrel brewing system upon entry. Fans will enter through newly constructed garage doors that provide a wider space to connect to the ballpark experience and order from a new 27-foot-long bar, which sounds nice, but I got to tell you, that 27 feet, if you don't have enough bartenders, that just makes your wait that much longer. But again, very happy to see it, especially as, you know, a hometown boy. Nice to hear from Leinenkugel's president, Tony Buehr. He says, "We're certainly honored to partner with the brewers to deliver a unique brewery experience for fans. This project has been a big one, and we're really looking forward to opening. We know fans will enjoy the opportunity to try the new beers brewed here that they can only get at the Barrel Yard." And it's again, it's just so pleasing to hear that Tony Buehr has taken over as president of the Leinenkugel Brewing Company. Dick Leinenkugel ran things for many years after Jake Leinenkugel joined the Department of Veterans Affairs for a time a few years back. And the Buehrs are, in fact, connected to the Leinenkugel family. So this is still in the family. And I want to say that Mark Buehr is Tony's father, not uncle, but I apologize if I'm getting that wrong. Mark Buehr has been a Wheeler dealer in Wisconsin politics and policy discussions for, you know, going on 40 years easily. When I was in college, I would cover the Eau Claire County Board for the college TV station. And Mark Buehr was a county board member at the time, just a whip smart one. He was always our go-to guy with any questions whatsoever. He knew what he was doing. And it was just interesting to watch him rise up the ranks alongside Tommy Thompson in the administration and then beyond. And now to see that Tony Buehr is taking over just does my heart a lot of good. Hey, Aaron, as far as the restaurant goes, I have to admit that whether it was a Fridays or the restaurant to be named later, I don't think I spent any time in there. Did you?
I have not. However, I do have to say that I'm very grateful to have something sports related finally not be named after an insurance company.
That's true. See, now I've realized here's part of my weakness for today. I wanted to laugh harder at that, but after having been coughing for the better part of 4 or 5 days, I'm now at the point where I'm really concerned that I'm just going to tear an oblique if I start laughing and get into another coughing fit. So, Aaron, I'm going to need you to stop being funny, if you could, for the remainder of the morning, please.
I will do the best that I can. I'll hold back on sound effects.
No, that's okay. It reminds me that when I had my appendix out, I had complications and actually needed 3 surgeries over the course of a month. And in the third one, they just opened me up top to bottom and, you know, cleaned out all the infection and what have you. And so, you know, there's a big incision down the middle of my belly that has to heal. Well, somebody was well-intentioned to bring me a book by an author. I can't remember who the author was now. And I really wanted to read it, but I kept laughing out loud and I couldn't do that because I was trying to keep my stomach from bursting out like a, you know, like an alien in one of those movies. So there's just times where, you know, the laughter has to wait while you're incapable of putting too much strain on those obliques. So, Aaron, I think we're just going to have to go with, you know, just very serious stuff from now on.
Again, I'll do the best I can. we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's see. What do we have coming up here at 6:30? We are going to talk about the Main Street Alliance. And I spoke yesterday with Sean Fetteplace and Naomi Smith. And if you have not heard us talk about Main Street Alliance, if you're not familiar with it, what you need to know is that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, WMC, the big business lobby, the de facto state Republican Party, does not represent small businesses. They say they do, but they don't. And Main Street Alliance does, on behalf of the small businesses who understand that the policy needs of hometown entrepreneurs are different than the big boys. And Main Street Alliance got entrepreneurs pumped up to use their voice to a greater degree in the election. And now they're getting set to do that when they meet with new members of the legislature and Congress. So we're going to hear from them coming up right after this break for news and weather. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
You know, we haven't talked to our friend Sean Fetteplace from Main Street Alliance in quite some time. He's been a little busy. There was this election thing. So on Tuesday, I got to visit with him and Naomi Smith, their policy program manager. We'll get to what they think the new legislature and the new Congress should get done for Wisconsin small businesses. But first, I asked about their intense, seemingly nonstop outreach to entrepreneurs to help them understand the issues about taking voting seriously and about amplifying their voices. Looking back, how do you feel it went?
I think it went well. Earlier last year, Shonda Causer, our executive director, and the team came together to develop a strategy for getting out the vote and for really helping to uplift small business voices in the process. And you know, I'm excited to say that we hosted four U.S. Senate roundtables, Milwaukee, Madison, Appleton, and we're also over in La Crosse with the 3rd Congressional District race, and we're able to engage directly with the candidates to ask them what they would do on issues like healthcare, childcare, paid leave, making sure that entrepreneurs can get access to capital, having a fair tax code, and really reining in monopolies and enforcing our antitrust laws. And so we hosted those roundtables where we had, over the course of all those events, 250 small business owners attended. We also got folks on the record with candidate questionnaires. We were able to work with small business owners to help promote voting in a nonpartisan way. And it was just really, really great to see, you know, the hundreds of member businesses across the state really come together to promote voting, to help make sure that we continue to have a healthy democracy, and to ensure that politicians and folks running for office are prioritizing small business.
I mean, all of this was really at the heart of it, was telling people who frequently say they're too busy, you know, to get involved or to vote. And they think that, you know, they may be, you know, thinking already, well, the Republicans are the business party, right, or whatnot. I mean, there was a lot that you had to overcome. It was kind of a tall assignment. Tell me about some of the moments that, you know, really clicked with people, with entrepreneurs, when they understood they weren't yet using their voice to their full extent.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that Appleton, I think, was one of the best roundtables that we had. We had really strong attendance. We had it at a place called Longchang Marketplace, which is a Hmong small business incubator. Macy, and we have members in the area that help to support it to make sure that folks who are first generation, second generation, get the support they need to be able to grow their business. And so it's really just great to be in that space and working with those entrepreneurs. Michelle Tressler and Irene Strobein are two of our leaders in the state. And it was just so funny because there was one point where they were being interviewed and being asked their story at the same time with two different TV stations, helping to elevate, you know, both their story, but also what they would like to see from elected officials. And, you know, we had a couple of members comment that, you know, my voice does make a difference, that this is something that we can do. And the thing about small business owners is that they already have a network. They already have skills. They already know how to talk with people. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have a very successful small business. And they already have like 90% of what they need. I think for us, what we try to do is just make sure that they have the information they need about how government works, how, you know, to impact lawmakers, what actually will get their attention, and, you know, really work with them to help develop what our policies are. And that's ultimately what we wanted to see happen with these events. It was great to hear directly from the candidates, but it was really about uplifting those small business owners' voices to make sure that We have a economy that works for everyone.
All right, Sean Fetteplace is with us from Main Street Alliance. And we did some looking back over the 2022 run-up to the elections. Obviously, after a bit of a break, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half, it was time to look ahead to 2023. Let's talk a bit about what you're doing there at the state level. Then we're going to talk to Naomi to talk about some of the federal priorities.
Cool. So really excited for 2023. We're entering our third year in Wisconsin. We expanded to Wisconsin at the height of the pandemic in August of 2020. And we've grown to over 600 member businesses. If you include our supporters, it's close to 1,200 folks that we're working with across the state. And in January, we're going to be hosting 10 house meetings across the state and in every corner to help prep for our big day of action on February 13th. This is our first statewide mobilization. We both because the state legislature was out of session most of this year, and also because of COVID, we hadn't really had an opportunity to bring everyone together in one place to really use their voice at the state capitol. And so super excited to be able to do that. We're going to be at Garver Feed Mill here in Madison, which is a member business of MSA. They received a lot of support from the state to help recover from the pandemic and is a good success story of that recovery. And we're going to be heading up to the Capitol with at least 75 small business owners to make sure that the state legislature knows that we need to prioritize past BadgerCare expansion with a public option, past paid leave, and let's make sure that childcare is supported so that providers continue to get the support they need to continue to do those jobs, but that also that parents can continue to have slots and at affordable price to be able to do so. Because we're actually potentially going to experience a fiscal cliff with childcare. Many childcare centers, most of them, have received financial support from the American Rescue Plan. That was enormously helpful during the pandemic. But at the end of 2023, those monies are going to start to run out. And if that happens, you're going to see a 30% cut in revenue for childcare centers across the state. That would be catastrophic for both those centers and for families and for small business owners who rely on their staff to be able to find affordable, accessible childcare. So, you know, we're going to work really hard on state budget, make sure that we have members from the key districts across the state, and then keep the pressure up over the course of the year to make sure that we get a budget that really is what is going to be best for Main Street.
Let's now turn to Congress and the federal government and split Congress with Republicans taking over the House. Naomi Smith is the policy program manager. And Naomi, as you're looking at more of a federal level, you know, one theme that I hear in other conversations from, you know, from farming to small business to whatnot is competition and basically, you know, antitrust laws. You know, we think of the, you know, the monopolies as like Standard Oil, you know, over 100 years ago. But it seems like there are plenty of anti-competitive practices that you're going to be asking lawmakers to look at and say, is this really the best we can do for small businesses?
Absolutely. And we saw this year the Senate introduced the American Innovation and Online Choice Act, and that was a great first step for targeting monopolies and antitrust across the country. But we're looking for that to be pushed harder in the new Congress. You know, we're looking for empowerment antitrust authorities to break up large tech companies that disproportionately impact small businesses around the country, especially MSA members.
Well, we've had such an era of corporate concentration. And I mean, it's not like Amazon, Facebook, and Google are going to go away tomorrow. But I am old enough to remember the breakup of AT&T and where the government saw a role that wanted to make sure that, you know, small businesses have fair access to competition. So what kinds of things will you be telling people who might be skeptical of trying to do anything about, you know, corporate monopolies and anti-competitive efforts?
I think so. This may be a great opportunity to look at states that are successfully passing legislation that is attacking anti-monopoly and antitrust. You can look at New York. You can look at Minnesota. These are states that are doing it, and we need our federal government to follow suit.
Now, you also have, you know, Sean's talked about, you know, going to the state capitol. You're planning something for the U.S. Capitol as well in the springtime.
Yes. So in May is Small Business Month across the country, and we'll be hosting our own lobby day with MSA members, bringing them to Washington, D.C. to speak with their representatives about issues that matter most to them, whether that's monopoly, healthcare, access to capital. We're super excited to host over 100 sessions with members of Congress regarding issues impacting small businesses.
And look, small businesses, that's enough of a hill to climb as it is. Now imagine being in an underserved community, a community of color, a vulnerable group, and trying to access capital. And that's something that you've been working on as well. And what kinds of things are you going to urge for actions in 2023?
Absolutely. In 2023, Main Street Alliance will be focusing on particularly BIPOC communities, rural entrepreneurs, and those that have experience in the criminal justice system around access to capital.
So let me come back to the state budget for a second here, Sean, because as I've said 1,000 times, I'm going to say it 1,000 times more, there's just no way that any decent legislature can't get out of a $6 billion surplus fight without a win-win. I mean, it's just right there for the taking. And yet all of the early signs in Wisconsin point against it. You were recently in Minnesota, and it had to feel kind of like political whiplash looking at the possibilities, across the river.
Yeah. So in Minnesota, there is now a trifecta government. So you have Governor Walz, and you also have a huge surplus. I still don't quite understand how they have a $19 billion surplus. That is absolutely astronomical. But what it means is that you have a scenario where there's a political moment that's going to make it easier to be able to get important legislation for small business passed, and also the resources to be able to pay for it. And so, Mel Coe is our absolutely outstanding organizer in Minnesota. And I know she's super excited to be able to help pass paid leave, help make sure that there's a public option for healthcare, make sure we're making important investments in childcare. And I tell you what, Wisconsin has been losing the fight to Minnesota for a while now to attract talent and attract young families and attract entrepreneurs, and because they've had, frankly, better policy at the state level, that's helped to attract those folks. And if these policies pass, which they should, and we're going to work very hard to make that happen, I think it's just going to put the pressure on even more our state legislators in Wisconsin to make sure that we're not leaving our state behind by not making these investments in Main Street, small businesses, and families. And so it'll be, as we're moving the work in both states, it's going to be very, like you said, political whiplash, very different environments. But I think it just goes to show that we need to make these investments and make them now, both in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and across the country.
Well, there's no doubt that there will be much to discuss with Wisconsin legislators to try to help them see the possibilities of a win-win, and hopefully finding, some common ground in a divided Congress as well. And it will be thanks to the work of Sean Fedeplace and Naomi Smith from Main Street Alliance, who joined us today. Thanks to both of you. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you too. And I have to say, Naomi and I, we're great, but our members are going to be the ones who are going to make this happen. And so just really excited to work with small business owners, both here and across the country in DC, and really work to make sure that we take advantage of this moment and make sure that we're prioritizing small business. Thank you very much, Pat, for having us on.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. All right. So again, Sean Fedeplace and Naomi Smith talking about the estimated $6.6 billion state surplus and what can be done with it. We're going to have a lot more to say about that at the top of the next hour. And I'm going to give a lot of credit to a couple of Wisconsin bloggers who help us understand, in about as close as we can get to plain English, why the things that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and other Republican lawmakers are saying about the state budget surplus are not entirely right. They are skewed, and they are meant to set the scene for giving away much of the surplus in tax cuts for the super wealthy, when the largest tax burden on families in Wisconsin does not necessarily come from the state income tax. And so there could be better ways to handle this, to make those investments that are not only good for families, but as Sean and Naomi mentioned, are also good for small businesses too. But what they're planning right now is quite literally redistributing money from the lower and middle classes to help the rich get richer. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, you know, we've been trying to add more voices on a weekly, biweekly basis, just to build a nice little stable of friends that we can check in on, especially anybody that can help us promote the Civic Media family of stations. And so we've talked in the past to Todd Alba, we've talked to Chad Holmes, and we are going to talk to Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio, WFHR, in Wisconsin Rapids. She's going to join us next for our usual segment this kind time of day about this day in music and history. So Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio is slated to join us next. This is Up North News Radio. It was on this day in 1979, The Clash released London Calling, their third studio album. It was critically acclaimed, currently sitting at number 16 on the Rolling Stone list of the 500 best albums of all time. I don't know that I would naturally abide by that list, Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids, unless it includes John Denver and the Muppets, A Christmas Together, one of the best Christmas albums of all time.
Well, anytime you have the Muppets, Pat.
Exactly. So, Melissa, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Pat. How are you?
Great. It's so nice to have you along here. I mentioned earlier that the Civic Media holiday party took place over the weekend. It was such a great chance to finally meet some folks in person and, you know, meet other folks for the very first time, learn more about, you know, the growth of the Civic Media family. And yes. So I wanted to take some time to talk a bit more about WFHR and what all is happening there these days and what you're doing with it. And then we'll play with some of the music and history notes as well. But do you want to give us a little background on, you know, you and the intersection of you and Locally Grown Radio?
So I started with WFHR a little over a year ago now. It was actually November 8th was my 1 year anniversary with them. I joined as their news person in the morning and became their news director. And then I also co-host on the morning show with James on the WFHR side. And then on the WIRI side, which is our country station, I do the news on there as well. And then PSA's updates, it's a country music station. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And WFHR has a very long history
in
Wisconsin Rapids. I mean, it's one of those legacy stations.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Kind of a core of the community.
I remember, again, I'm going way, way back now, but working at the college radio station at UW-Eau Claire, and one of my classmates, his name was Carl Holke, and he eventually went to WFHR. And even though we hadn't seen each other forever, I felt like I saw him every day, because every day he was contributing to the Associated Press Newswire of Wisconsin Stories, because they ran such a busy newsroom there. You know, and that's what you love about local radios, when they can continue to cover the news and make those connections.
Absolutely. And Carl, I've heard so much about what he contributed to WFHR. And Pam is still with us. His wife, Pam, it runs our office, and she is the heart of WFHR.
Oh, that's so great. Well, good. Yes. Melissa Kay is here from Locally Grown Radio, one of the newest additions to the Civic Media family of stations. So we mentioned London Calling before, and I know as I was looking at the notes for the morning show up there, which starts right at the top of the hour here, 7 o'clock on Locally Grown Radio, that you guys occasionally, or maybe it's daily, get into little music and history notes as well.
Oh yeah, we talk about music, we talk about history, we have a lot of fun. We have on Mondays, I actually do a short segment of a cooking show. It's called The Kitchen's Open. And Beth Habhager and I do a little brief, you know, 15, 20 minute segment on cooking. This week it was on baking. So I gave baking tips for old and new bakers, those of us who are great at it, those who think they can't, but you can.
It sounds like you're doing a local version of the Great British Baking Show, where everybody's very nice to one another. Not one of those cutthroat reality shows.
Well, Beth and I are nice to each other, but when Seth and I co-host with James, that's Beth's husband, Seth, we're not. We have a wonderful brother-sister fight it out over the radio relationship. We have a lot of fun.
I'm sure that's a lot of fun to hear. All right, let's get to what's happening this day in history. You're going to hear these first few notes from Marvin Gaye. I mean, everybody knows this one. So, Melissa, any guesses as to when Marvin Gaye hit number one on this day and what year, and then held the spot for 5 weeks?
Yeah, I'm not your person for this, Pat, but I don't even have a good guess.
That's okay. 1968.
I was going to say 72. I was way off.
Oh, yeah. Right in there. Let's see. The following year, 1969, the Jackson 5 made their TV debut on the Ed Sullivan Show, and this is the actual audio from that appearance on Ed Sullivan. Everybody was so in love with Little Michael Jackson back at the time, and he has another role in music history on this day in 1991. His eighth album, Dangerous, hit number one on the U.S. album chart, stayed there for 4 weeks as well. Again, some of us of a certain vintage remember that it wasn't a feud. It was like just interesting to have these two different family groups. You had the Jackson 5, later the Jacksons, and you had the Osmonds, you know, Donnie and Merrill and Wayne and Jay and Alan. I cannot believe I just did that. I just recited all the brothers in the Osmonds. And then, of course, Maria Osmond a little later on. So, and I say in this segment all the time, Melissa, it does make me wonder what songs now will be the classic rock songs, you know, of the future, which ones we will completely forget and which ones will stick around forever.
Well, on this day, Adele had her number one in both the UK and the US charts. And Adele is going to, I think, be one of those names that's going to stick around forever.
Oh, yeah. Let's give a little listen to Send My Love. You told me you were ready for the big one, for the big jump. I'd be your last love, everlasting, you and me. Yeah, Adele is already, what do you want to say? I guess a contemporary legend in that, yeah, everybody's going to know who she is for many years to come.
I would say so.
Do you consider yourself a fan?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, I hope that eventually we'll say her name how she would prefer it to be said, Adele.
Adele?
Yep, Adele.
Things I learn in this segment every day. I know that she, I mean, her writing is so personal. To live in an era with her and with Taylor Swift and other female songwriters, you know, again, others had to pave the way for them, you know, right. Your Carole Kings and things like that. But my goodness, the raw power they can put into these things is just outstanding. And I think we're all better off when you can hear more about, you know, what women really want to say about love and love lost. And in this case, you know, trying to move on.
Absolutely. And the availability of music now, you don't just have to listen to the radio. You can get it from a lot of other sources, which can expose you to a lot of different artists that you wouldn't otherwise be able to hear.
Yeah. All right. One last note on history. It was on this day, December 14th, 1836, a boundary dispute is settled between Michigan and Ohio. In return for Michigan giving up its claim to a strip of land on its southern border, that strip of land goes to Ohio. In exchange, Michigan gets the UP. Not fair. I mean, you agree that should be ours, right?
Well, I don't really want to weigh in because I've got friends that live in Michigan that particularly appreciate their Upper Peninsula.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk more about those Upers another time. Melissa, thank you so much. It's so great to visit with you. I look forward to doing it again.
I do too. Thank you, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. Coming up in our next hour, except you folks in Wisconsin Rapids who are leaving us now, for the rest of you in our next hour, Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. This is Up North News Radio.